This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. We're at the Aquarius Casino Resort, and the UFO Congress is going on here. And really, it's an international event, if there ever was one. And we have a lady right now from Ireland with us to prove that it's an international event. Betty Myler, how are you?
Very well indeed. Thank you, Jerry.
Now, you are the president of the UFO organization. Tell me your exact title there.
It's I'm the president of the UFO Society of Ireland.
And you are actually from where in Ireland?
I'm living in a little town called Boyle in the County Roscommon.
Yeah, that's what
in the middle
I was getting
at.
I was trying to figure out how you were.
Where I was, yeah. I was in a little town in the middle of Ireland, in the west of Ireland. And I founded the society.
Yeah, and when you say you're the founder, immediately my question is, why? I mean, did you have a UFO experience? Or are you just interested in it? Or what happened?
No, it's quite interesting. In 1996, an article appeared in one of the papers, national papers, News of the World, which is a slightly sensational type of a paper, and it said there'd been a UFO crash. It said there'd been a UFO crash in the mountains just outside my hometown. So
so now, when was this?
1996.
Okay.
Yep.
Not that far back.
Not that far back. Before that, I had no interest, no knowledge, no nothing of UFOs at all. So anyway, some people came down from Dublin to investigate this supposed UFO crash and did a presentation in a pub in Ireland. Well, you know, where else would you do a thing like that but in a pub? So anyway, I got interested and listened to what they had to say. And then I was talking to some of my friends in the town, and there seemed to be so many people who had had experiences or sightings of some description. And they said, wouldn't it be nice to get together and form a little society, you know, so we could talk about our experiences, exchange stories, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it sounds like you promoted this all the way from this event to the whole country of Ireland.
I mean, well, then what happened after that was I was just a small organization to begin with. Uh-huh. And then in 1998, I was interviewed by Women's Way. Now, Women's Way is a women's magazine that comes out once a week. And they gave me a full 2-page spread in this magazine. And as soon as that magazine was on the shelves, I got radio interviews from every radio station in Ireland. Dublin, in the east, Galway in the west.
I take it a radio in Ireland are not bashful to talk about UFOs. In fact, they're interested.
Well, they were very bashful to start. They were interested, but still laughing about it, shall we say.
So they did it as a comedy relief originally.
Yes, absolutely.
But you were smart enough of a woman to take this and promote it to something.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was talking to people, I found that there seemed to be a lot of, like, sounded like little old ladies who would say they'd seen something 20, 30, 40 years ago, never told anybody before, because they were, frankly, embarrassed. And it wasn't great to talk to somebody who would listen to them, and more than that, who would believe them. That was the important thing. So then I thought, well, there's no point being a little organization in my area. I'll just go nationwide. So overnight, I just became the UFO Society of Ireland. And I was waiting for somebody to come and say, you can't do that, because we are the UFO Society of Ireland. And nobody did. So, therefore, I was the UFO Society of Ireland, just like that.
So, congratulations, Betty.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that UFO crash a little bit. That got my attention. Did it really happen?
No.
Or was it just a report?
It was a report that was a UFO crash. We tried to investigate. It was very strange because it's in a mountainous area, and the roads were sealed off. And we saw, you know, black limos and sort of men with American accents who stand out a mile, as you can imagine, in the country in Ireland. And we investigated. There was something funny going on.
Something, at least, they did show up and investigate it, and probably more.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it was a UFO, because a colleague of mine went out with a Geiger counter, a magnometer, and we found no signs of radiation. And we heard afterwards that it seemed to be something like a black helicopter or something, a secret army.
So it could have been a black operation or something top secret.
It was something top secret because the army sent in their helicopters and the whole place was shut off for a while. But we never could get to the bottom of it. But it certainly wasn't UFO.
In a country like Ireland, did the Irish authorities take charge, or did they have these American people with the accents blocking the roads?
Well, I think it was a bit of both, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you see, the army and the police would have to block off the roads. The Americans couldn't obviously do that. But the Americans didn't sort of stay around very long, so I don't think it was a UFO thing at all.
Yeah, no reports of in the middle of the night a flatbed truck leaving with a UFO on top or anything like that. No convoys.
But you see, it got me interested.
Okay, now you deal with UFO sightings. Have you had anything like that in Ireland?
We have loads of sightings in Ireland. All the time I'm getting... First, let me tell you how I... I told you how I got to be the UFO Society of Ireland. And then, of course, they needed a president, so I just decided to become the president of the UFO Society of Ireland. And I just run the show single-handed, shall we say. But now I get a lot of reports from, people see something strange, they telephone me. And we've had a couple of really, really interesting sightings. One was on the 1st of January last year. There was a charity swim in a lake just near my hometown. And a friend of mine went down to, do her swim. Her brother went with her, took a photograph of herself, then turned his attention to a little island just about 500 meters off the shore because he wanted it as a screensaver for his computer. Now, Jerry, this is a deserted island. It was about 1:30 in the afternoon, not a very nice sort of day. This man took photographs, couldn't see anything at all. When he processed it on the computer, there was a huge white light in the middle of this island. Now, if you were to judge by the size of the trees on this island, which grow 30 to 40 foot high, I suppose, this light was about a third the size. So we're talking about a 10 to 15 foot diameter light, which is a big light.
A big light, okay.
And nobody saw it. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, really?
Yep. And then...
So what do you make of that? I wonder.
Well, the man who gave me the photograph, we met in a pub. Where else would you meet in Ireland? Met in a pub, gave me the photograph, and as he was leaving, he said, there's a portal there. And I thought, that's a funny thing for him to say, because he's not that sort of a person, really. So anyway... I check with my pendulum. I do a lot of pendulum work, you see. So I check with my pendulum, and yes, it was a UFO, and yes, there is a portal there, and the UFO wasn't seen actually on the island, but it was about 25 foot in front, which leads me to think that there could be a portal in the lake.
In other words, there may be an underwater base there.
That's what I think. You can't, of course,
Is that prove that, anything, that that's not in the same area as the Loch Ness Monster, is it?
No, Loch Ness does.
Okay.
No. And then, funnily enough, on the 5th of May last year as well, two colleagues and myself, one of them is over here, Carl Nally, he's with me here. The three of us went out in a boat to this island to see whether we can, find anything. And I just bought a new digital camera, so I gave it to Carl to do a bit of flashing around. And it was a muggy old sort of day. Couldn't see anything. But when we went to process it on the computer that evening, there was a big white light in the identical spot. So that was amazing, wasn't it?
Huh.
There's no sort of explanation for it. But on another occasion...
Now, what time of the day?
It was 10:30 in the morning.
Oh,
no. 10:30 in the morning.
Both of them were daytime sightings.
Both of them were daytime. Uh-huh. But when you say sightings, they weren't sightings and we didn't see them. But the reports just came out recorded on the digital camera, which is amazing. And of course, what is happening now is that, what we're told anyway, is that these UFOs, they
They seem to show up on these digital cameras.
The reason for that, we're told, is that they vibrate at very high frequencies, too high for our eyes to detect, but they come out on a digital camera. So this happens all the time now.
Now you have started from this interest back in 96.
Yes.
Promoted yourself to the head of the state of the country.
That's right. There was nobody else to do it. It's a good idea.
Right. And now you're having some sort of meeting or a convention or something, right?
Yes. I'm going to have the 4th Irish International UFO Conference, which is going to be held on the 22nd and the 23rd of September.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that in detail.
Okay.
And we will have some information on our website as well about that.
Oh, fabulous.
And, you've done pretty well for a person who just all of a sudden decided they wanted to be the ruler of the world.
Yes, I think it's marvelous.
You're getting close, Betty.
I'm getting close. Yeah. I'm getting close.
Our guest is Betty Myler. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. We're broadcasting from the UFO Congress.
I'm Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda, the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. I'm here today to tell you one of the most fascinating stories I've come across in my career as a journalist. The secret of Reggate is that so many people in one small American community now know that there is so much more to the universe than what we see and experience in our everyday world.
Save $5 this month when you purchase The Secret of Reggate DVD from ShopJerryPippin.com. This film won the prestigious People's Choice Awards at the 2004 UFO Conference. The Secret of Reggate will astound you. You will want to see it again and again. Save $5. Order it now, this month only, at ShopJerryPippin.com. Secret of Reggate, a Linda Cowan production. This is truly an international event, and we have our good friend sitting close to us in the audience, who's from Greece, right? And Betty Myler, our guest, is from Ireland. And we went to the break, Betty. We talked about a couple of interesting sightings in Ireland and also how you got started in UFOs, and it's led to a conference.
That's right.
This is the fourth one?
The fourth one, yes.
Where exactly is it going to be?
It's going to be held in a little town called Carrick-on-Shannon. It's a lovely little town on the shores of the Shannon. And it's going to be held on the 22nd and 23rd of September in the Bush Hotel, Carrick-on-Shannon, and that is in County Leitrim in Ireland.
Now what exactly are you going to be presenting there? It's a two-day affair?
It's a two-day conference, that is mm-hmm. correct, and we have a good array of speakers. Paula Harris, who is at the convention over here.
Right. In fact, we had Paula on earlier. We work with Paula quite a lot.
Yes. She's going to be one of my speakers. Yvonne Smith.
Yvonne's been on our show.
Yes, she is going to be here as well. The others you may not be familiar with. One is Dr. Norma Milanovic. I don't know whether you've heard of her.
Now, tell me a little bit about Dr. Norma.
She's an American lady, a very highly spiritual lady. She's more into sort of spirituality, to be quite honest with you, than UFOs, but she channels the Arcturians. And I met her at a seminar last year in England, and I was very impressed with her and asked her to talk at my thing. So it'll be bringing in the Arcturians, that'll be the UFO, should we say, theme mm-hmm. of it. And the other people you may not be familiar with, one is a David Coggins from England. He's a hypnotist, and he will be showing some tapes of what people have revealed under hypnotism, obviously with their consent, of course. We also have Jane McCarthy from Wales, who will talk on the connection between energy lines, orbs, dimensions, and UFOs. And we have another man, Malcolm Robinson from London, and he's a UFO researcher into strange alien life forms. We have another Ellis Taylor, also from London, who has interacted with
So in other words, you have a complete and full bill, and they can go to our website and see who all you have there.
What
are the dates again?
22nd and 23rd of September.
And
on the I must tell you this, on the Saturday, we have a trip down the River Shannon, which is a four-hour trip with music and a buffet on board, a chance to get to meet the speakers and just relax. And last year, in fact, on this trip, we saw a UFO.
Oh, you did?
We did, yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, people were on the bridge of the boat, and all of a sudden people started shouting, UFO, UFO, and there was big white light that just went into a cloud. So everybody was very, very excited, you can imagine.
Wow.
So we hope to see one this year as well.
Well, mate, they have a big speakers party here at the UFO Congress.
Yes, that's right.
You have one on a boat going down the river.
Yes, so that's a bit unique. And the last 2 years we've also had, and this is really unique, a belly dancer coming down and doing about a 15-minute little stint. And she goes down, as you can imagine, an absolute treat. And she hopes she'll be coming this year as well.
Now, you know, the more I talk to you, Betty, the more I hear about other UFO experiences you've had there in Ireland, and at least sightings that you've investigated. You mentioned that you have a regression therapist using hypnotism.
Yes.
What do you make of all that, yourself personally?
Of regressions? Well, I think that they're a very, very valid point, and in fact, Carl, my colleague who will be speaking to you later, he in fact is a hypnotherapist, and you know, I think he does regressions as well. I haven't, should we say, been under, because you know, I haven't had that sort of an experience. But I want to tell you just another very interesting thing that we've got in Ireland, and that is last year a couple were traveling along the road just outside of Boyle, which is my hometown. And they saw a huge, huge, but huge white light with beams coming down. And I said, you know, what did you do? They said, my husband got frightened and just, you know, tried to get as far away as he possibly could. Well, what I discovered was the place where this beam of light was coming out from is a mound. It's a little mound near the golf course in Boyle. And it's a place called Knocknabrusna. Now, this mound is reputed to be the burial place of César. César was the granddaughter of Noah. Noah put her out of the ark. I don't know why. Maybe he had too many women, I don't know. Anyway, she found a boat, and with 40 little friends, she landed on the shores of Ireland. And she's reputed to be buried in this mound. Now, I've been up to this particular mound with a couple of mediums. One of them could see that there was a cavern. The whole mound was hollow, a cavern
So go back into this cave, kind of.
Yeah. It seems to me that this is a UFO hangar. That's my interpretation of it, you know. And then the other thing is, I've been there with another medium, and she could get a direct ley line from this mound to Mount Ararat. And what is reputed on Mount Ararat?
That's where
the Ark of the Covenant. Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Noah's Ark.
Right.
Isn't that amazing?
Have you seen Noah's daughter, the ghost?
No, I haven't seen the ghost.
I thought maybe I was going to get a real exclusive here. I didn't
know. No, I haven't.
But the psychic you were with got some vibes.
Got definite vibes. I'll tell you another quite an interesting experience that I had myself. And that was the 19th of November, 1999.
Now, where was this?
19th of November, okay. 1999, and I was looking out of my bedroom window. I live on the top of a mountain, the side of a mountain, and I overlooked the town below me, and it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. I was just looking out because, you know, I always do to see what I could see, and I saw a cigar-shaped, very brightly lit cigar-shaped object going through the sky, and as I was looking at it, I saw another one, and another, 7 altogether. And I thought, this is very strange. So I waited a little later, and I telephoned one of my members, and he's very, very psychic. So I said, Robert, see if you can find something out for me. So he rang me a little later, and he said he had a message. And I said, what's the message? The message was this. Tell Betty that the UFOs she saw were there to assist the passage of time to ensure the correct sequence of events in the new millennium. And I thought, wow, this is a very strange message to get. And I was thinking about it afterwards, and it came to me that if you cast your mind back, Jerry, to the millennium, they expected all the computers to crash. They expected all the aircraft to fall out of the sky. Do you remember that?
Oh, sure.
And there was going to be absolute pandemonium.
Being a journalist, I was waiting for it.
You're waiting for
it. Right.
Yeah,
right. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And it nothing happened. Nothing happened.
Right. It didn't happen.
And my belief is that the UFOs were looking after us and making sure that everything was okay.
You think there was intervention?
Yeah. I think they were
instead
just
of divine
over.
Intervention, it was UFO
intervention.
UFO intervention.
Intervention. Yeah, okay. I think so. Really, I do. Maybe wrong, but, you know, it makes a good story anyway, doesn't it?
Well, you got me with it. I enjoyed it. Okay, so the conference is just before Christmas. Is that
just,
a problem?
Yes. No.
That's good, probably.
Well,
probably in Ireland you get vacation time.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jerry. Whatever day you take is the wrong day because there's always something going on somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to just go for it and make up your mind. But you see, September's a good time of year because it's the weather's still fairly good. The days are not getting too short, and also things are much cheaper there. Because if you go in the height of the summer, everything is very expensive. All the hotels get booked up, and you know it's impossible. So I reckon September is a good time of year.
Well, I tell you, it's been an interesting conversation, and thanks for you've been here before, right?
Yes.
You come here all the time from Ireland.
I was here 2 years ago, but I'm hoping to come again in the future.
At the UFO.
The other thing what I would like to say, if anybody does want to come to the conference, it's only a two-day conference, but particularly people coming, say, from America or from other parts of the world, you know, they might like to make a holiday of it because we have so many interesting things. We have loads of megalithic sites, standing stones, stone circles, dolmens, cairns, castles, churches, you know, so it would make a lovely holiday for the whole family. In case anybody was thinking about it.
We have another interesting guest coming up here in a moment from the UFO Congress. Thank you very much, Betty, for being with us. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back from Laughlin, Nevada, on the beautiful Colorado River. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Congress on JerryPippin.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles west.
Well, it's the Irish Hour. I'm Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to the UFO Congress. And we're broadcasting here all week with lots of shows. In fact, we have programs running right on through March that we've done here. But this is an interesting person that we have, Carl Anally, and he has a book out called Conspiracy of Silence, UFOs in Ireland. And we'll talk more about the book here in a little bit, but welcome to the UFO Congress, Carl.
Thank you very much, Jerry. It's really, really good to be here.
It's tell me a little bit about this book. Let's just talk about it right off the top, and why did you write it?
Okay, Jerry, this is a book, and as you said rightly there, it's entitled Conspiracy of Silence, UFOs in Ireland. It's the very first book of its type to come out of Ireland. It's written by myself and my colleague, Dermot Butler. We were both part of UFO organizations, you know, going back many, many years, and in 1998, we decided that we'd start our own organization. And the name of our organization is UPRI, UFO and Paranormal Research Ireland. We had a tremendous amount of UFO material gathered over the years, Jerry, as you could imagine, from being in so many different paranormal organizations. And we thought, hey, the time is right to let the people of Ireland know exactly what's going on, because many, many people outside of Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland were of the opinion that, hey, UFOs only appear, you know, in other places, and nothing happens in Ireland. And so we decided, hey, look, let's put the information that we have together and take the best of the information that we have gathered over the years, put it together in a book. And it's a really, really well put together book, and as you say, it's called Conspiracy of Silence, UFOs in Ireland.
You know, you talk about the book title, and
yes,
it immediately it gives me an impression that a lot of the same things that happened here in the United States happened in Ireland as far as authorities are concerned.
Jerry, that's correct. You know,
they don't want to talk about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, just as I was saying earlier, it's a situation where UFOs are seen in every country in the world. The planet doesn't escape. There's no country on the planet that escapes from the UFO phenomenon. However, there are only maybe a handful of countries around the world that are open and allow their information kept on file to be available to the public. However, we've discovered, dealing with what the debunkers always need is what they call, in inverted commas, trained observers. Now, who would you say these trained observers should be? Well, what we have are commercial pilots, military pilots, our Garda Síochána, our police, astronomers. We have written statements, for example, from all of these groups. But lately, over a certain part of Ireland, now there are certain hotspots in Ireland. One hotspot, for good reason, I think, is north of Dublin Airport, and it's called Newgrange. Now, for those of you who don't know, have never heard of Newgrange, well, now this is your first time, because Newgrange is the oldest building on the planet. It predates the pyramids by at least a half a millennium.
Now, how big of a building is this?
Well, Jerry, as you can see on the cover of the book here, mm-hmm. you know, it's a vast building. It's actually a passage tomb. And
how old would you say it is?
Well, I mean, if we're talking, well, now it's carbon C14 dated, I think. Maybe I think it's 6,500 years old. And pilots.
Is it made out of stone?
It's made out of granite. Uh-huh. It has standing stones around the building. The entrance of the building lines up with the winter solstice, which is the 21st of December. And the sun shines directly in through the front here and into a compartment at the back of the tomb. Now, the tomb is booked out by astronomers and scientists, I think, for the next 6 or 7 years to experience the phenomenon of the winter solstice. However, since this is the oldest building on the planet, we're not surprised that it has visitations by these spacecraft. Now, we have written statements from air crews of commercial airliners, not only our own airliner, Aer Lingus and Ryanair, but from other airline crews that have come into contact, Jerry, with triangular craft above Newgrange. Now, we gave this information to Dr. Richard Haynes, and we've been, back and forth with emails over the period of time, Jerry. And he asked us, he said, listen, gentlemen, what is the situation about these triangular craft in this area around Slane and above Newgrange? And we said, you know, Richard, we haven't a clue. We said, well, look, are there any military bases up there? Are there any hydroelectric dams up there? What is it that's attracting these triangular objects? And over a while, we couldn't think. We said, oh, you know, this is really, really baffling. And then all of a sudden it hit. Oldest building on the planet. The oldest building on the planet has a great history, Jerry. And do you mind if I tell you a little bit about the history for your listeners?
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. I'd like to hear your hypothesis.
Okay, Jerry. The thing is, in Ireland's history, there was a group of people that came to Ireland millennia ago. And the name of these people were the Tuatha De Danann. It's an Irish word, the Tuatha De Danann. These people, according to legend, came to Ireland in clouds of smoke. Not by boat, as anybody else would have come, but in clouds of smoke. They were preceded by the Druids, who came to Ireland in what's known as the Roth Vale. The Roth Vale, which is an Irish word for flying craft. And it is said that the Druids used this Roth Vale to travel in space. Now, it's not very, very interesting where we have a situation where the oldest building on the planet is now being visited by these triangular craft And we have many, many cases on file from, in inverted commas, you know, these trained observers that the debunkers always call for. Well, I want to tell you to these debunkers out there, we have this information on file in our little country of Ireland. And it makes very, very, very interesting reading, believe me.
So this goes all the way back to the most of ancient times and still going on today. Reports of UFO sightings and people coming from the clouds, that obviously sounds like UFOs, right?
Jerry, it certainly does. You and I both know that reading back into certain chapters in the Bible, you know, when the prophets, you know, are telling us that these beings like the Elohim and the, you know, came down in fiery chariots and, you know, burning clouds, etc. You know, a person at that time would only have a certain vocabulary, a certain ability to be able to describe something strange that he has been seeing. And the thing about it is this, you know, if you think even, Jerry, of the situation in Alien 59 in Fatima, before the appearance of the Virgin Mary in that year, a week or two beforehand, UFOs were sighted above the very spot. Now, for those people in those days with their vocabulary and their ability to describe things, in Ireland, they put it down to a religious phenomenon. Fair enough, that's okay. However, in the parlance of today's and the wisdom we have today and the understanding and the collective information that we have today on these UFOs, these craft, we now know that in those days it would have been a UFO.
This book, does it deal with the history of things like that, or do you have sightings in here? What else is in your book?
Well, Jerry, could I tell you some very interesting case, if I may, about in the area above Newgrange, on very, very recent case on the 4th of January 2004, an Aer Lingus flight, Echo India Bravo X-ray Delta, was crossing over the east coast, coming in to land at Dublin Airport on the main runway, runway 28. On the way in, he was followed in, the crew were followed in by a British Airways A330 at about 3 or 4 miles. This was at 8:30 at night. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine it was dark because it was the 4th of January. The British Airways craft noticed a black triangular object taken off from the ground behind the Aer Lingus 747. It began to circle the Aer Lingus passenger jet, and the crew of the British Airways jet could see that the Aer Lingus jet had taken on a purple colour. The crew of the Aer Lingus jet experienced what they called a power drain, where the lights went dim in the cabin and the rest of the aircraft. The triangle, which measured, they say, around 360 feet in length, then flew in front of the 747, all the time witnessed by the crew of the A330. The triangular UFO stopped in front of the 747. The crew asked for a vector, which is a movement of their aircraft to avoid a collision with the stationary triangular craft in the air. They were given a vector, which means a movement to the right of this object of 8 degrees. The object then took up the same heading as the Aer Lingus jet and began to circle the jet. It then flew to the port side, which is the left-hand side of the aircraft, and the wake turbulence was enough to raise the outside temperature of the aircraft to 4 degrees Celsius, as shown on the system's readout. Now, the crew of the British Airways craft had witnessed all this, and as the Aer Lingus jet was coming in to land on runway 28, the British Airways aircraft felt the turbulence as they came through the same area where the Aer Lingus jet had experienced that phenomenon. When the Aer Lingus jet was on finals to land on 28, this craft then veered off towards the Wicklow Mountains, which has a huge amount of sightings of UFOs in itself. Anyhow, when X-ray Delta landed on the ground, they found that they could not lift their air brakes more than 25% of the distance up. So there was damage to the hydraulics because of the wake turbulence from this triangular craft. And also, when they were told to go to stand 132 by the air marshal, the aircraft was examined, and they found that The leading edge of the wings were dented and the skin of the aircraft was dented as if by a lump hammer had made dents in it. The crew were told to go to the lounge there and wait there for further instructions and then were sent home for 4 days. Now, Jerry, this is not the end of the story. At 10:30 on the same night, we had a British Airways A330 coming in to land on runway 28 because it was the same main runway that evening. As the A330 was coming in, they found in front of them a stationary triangular craft. They asked for the vector to avoid collision with the craft. They got a 10 degree vector this time to the right to take up a position for finals for runway 28. The craft then aggressively, like in the first instance with the Aer Lingus jet, aggressively came towards the aircraft, and just like the crew of the Aer Lingus jet, they both filed a near miss with air traffic control in Dublin. And I have to say that also Dublin Air Traffic Control ATC had this object on radar. So what happened was the aircraft made a violent turn to the port side of the craft, and the wake turbulence again was so strong that it set off the wind shear warning device on the aircraft, which also tests and gives a readout of the stress on the aircraft. The same type of aircraft, a UFO, then flew off again in the same direction south towards the Wicklow Mountains. And this time, however, the British Airways craft landed without any damage. Now, that's only two of the many signed affidavits we have by commercial pilots stating that they have experienced triangular UFO above Newgrange, which is the oldest building on the planet. Now, we don't know what's going on. So, we told Richard Haynes, Richard, what we think, you know, is happening here is that we have the oldest building in the world north of Dublin Airport. If it's a situation where these craft have been seen, in Mexico, for example, above the pyramids in Mexico, in Egypt, over Stonehenge, these ancient monuments, might it not be a case that the same thing is happening here in Dublin, Ireland, over in the area, the oldest building on the planet?
We're talking with Carl Nally, and we'll be back in a moment to talk a little bit more about this. The name of the book is Conspiracy of Silence, UFOs in Ireland. Carl, I tell you, you did a pretty good job to get that report on the damage to the airplane. That probably wasn't easy to get.
Well, Jerry, you might say something. This report that we have, I want to make things clear, this report that we have is from a source that we have in aviation. I'm a pilot myself. What I want to tell you, Jerry, you know, you asked me earlier, you said, hey, look, Carl, what's the situation here? The book is called Conspiracy of Silence. Jerry, I want to tell you. When we had a situation where we said, hey, look, what we need to do, we need to contact the authorities and find out what the hell is going on here.
Well, let's take a break and we'll come back and find out what the authorities told you.
Excellent.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
This is Jerry Pippin. We're at the UFO Congress. Very enthralling report here with Carl Nally. And the name of the book is called Conspiracy of Silence, UFOs in Ireland. And do you live in Dublin?
Jerry, I certainly do, yeah. And it's a beautiful place to live. In actual fact,
do you live close to this oldest building in the world?
Jerry,
or is
I sure
that
do.
The other side of Ireland?
I sure do. It's only, I'd say, about 45 minutes drive from my house.
And how big is Dublin these days?
Dublin, that's the hardest question you could ask me, because Dublin is expanding at a rate, an unbelievable
and
rate.
Things are growing.
They certainly
things
are.
Things are well in Ireland.
Well, they are, no doubt about it, yeah. It's a dear country, but it's a lovely country.
Okay, so you let's get back to this. We talked about these reports, even on radar. They pick up the unidentified flying object. One of these planes had some damage on it. The other one didn't. One of them, the wind shear thing went
right.
off, and
yeah.
So obviously there was something there.
Yeah,
and we talked about the hypothesis or the thesis about the oldest building and the connection with the flying triangles.
Yes,
and the sightings. But
yes.
Now, according to your book, A Conspiracy of Silence, I take it the authorities were less than optimistic about giving you any information or willing to give you any information.
Absolutely, the author Timothy Good heard about this particular case and was intrigued, so intrigued with the case that he came from England over to meet myself and my colleague Dermot Butler. So we met with him and we gave the information to him, and he was absolutely intrigued by this. He said, my God, you know, there's something going on here. We have to see if we can work together to get to the end of this. So Tim, on the way over, purposely took an Aer Lingus aircraft over to Dublin, purposely. He wrote a letter to the crew asking for any of the crew of any Aer Lingus aircraft to please contact him and give information on what's going on here, because there's something above the skies here that's terrorizing the crews of commercial aircraft coming in. So, on the way over to him, and I thought it was a very, very good idea, you know, say hats off to him, he gave the letter to the stewardess, who went up to the cabin. The pilots had a look at it and said, oh, no, we don't want to do with that. And she came back a little bit embarrassed and handed the letter back to Tim and said, I'm sorry, they won't take it. Well, not surprised at that, because when Tim came over, he came over with a gentleman by the name of Graham Shepherd, who has sadly passed away. Now, Graham...
Yeah, I've met him before. Yeah.
Beautiful man.
Yeah.
Beautiful man. And Graham and his wife came over.
Right.
Graham told us that in 1967 he had experience of UFO activity flying over France, which was caught on Bordeaux radar. He had also experience of UFOs over Manchester, which were also caught on radar. A while ago he decided, you know, to have a chat, you know, with the media. The media were very interested. Hey, look, here's the pilot, and he's willing to come forward, and he's willing to say, hey, look, I was flying a commercial aircraft, and I came across UFOs in the sky in front of me. They were also on radar. And when I inquired about it, I was told, no, when I got down, there was no UFO on radar. And what you're seeing was, you know, ball lightning, or it was another aircraft, or it was an invasion. And he said, so what he did was, he was having a chat with the media. When the chief pilot of British Airways found out about it, Graham received a letter from the chief pilot himself to say, knock it off, no more talking to the media, or else your job is in jeopardy. Now,
so that's kind of what the airlines do here. And I imagine their rationale is safety issues. They don't want people thinking that there's things out there they can't control. And you're talking about, the same thing, except there's some government involvement here, right?
Absolutely. The reason why I gave that little example, Jerry, is to you know, let the people know out there that it's not easy for a pilot to come forward and to give information on UFO activity. And the reason for that is this. Their careers would be in jeopardy. In Ireland, it might take maybe 100,000 to 120,000 euro in order to gain your commercial pilot's license. And what pilot is going to come forward now in this day and age publicly and say, hey, look, I was involved with a UFO in an area in the sky that damaged my jet, or we had a situation where it frightened the passengers and the aircraft was in danger. They'd be out of a job like a light. What's happening is, they will come to us, and they know full well over the years they can trust us. We've been in the business now a long time. They will come down and tell us, provided that the names are not revealed, and we will not reveal their names. Mm-hmm. However, we have all the information there in our files. Now, Jerry, just to go back to you to answer your question. We contacted in Dublin, the IAA, that's the Irish Aviation Authority, to inquire about this, and they should know about it. And they said to us, and we have all the letters in our files, no, we know nothing about this. No, absolutely not. The crew never reported. It was never on radar. So we said, okay, if that's the situation, then we will approach the AAIU, which is the Air Accident Investigation Unit, because there were almost two near collisions between a triangular UFO and two jets on the same evening of the 4th, 2004. So we got in touch with the AAIU, and again we came up against a stone wall. No, we have no records of that. Now, keep in mind, Jerry, do we have affidavits, signed affidavits by the crew? By crews. We have about 8 so far. And we're told, no, the crew never seen anything. It wasn't on radar, etc. So we got in touch with the Department of Defence, and we met a stone wall there as well. We got in touch with the Department of Transport, who control both the IAA and the AAIU, and met a stone wall there as well. Now, Jerry, could I say to you this? These crews of these passenger airlines are the very people that fly us around the world day after day after day after day. And we give our lives into their hands. Now, either these people, these crews, are damn liars, telling us complete lies, or they're telling us the truth, or they're all mad, they're all insane.
Well, I'm inclined to think they're telling us the truth.
Well, now, there you have it. There's a situation where not one of those pilots of the crews have been ever, at any point in time, dismissed from their work. They haven't come publicly about it. Nobody has been sent to a psychiatrist for any psychiatric evaluation. So, the only thing is left is, Jerry, as you say, they are telling the truth. However, we have dealt many times, with these government departments. And we're not surprised because, I mean, it's the same in every other country. Well, almost every other country. And especially here, you know how hard it is. But the main thing about it, Jerry, is what I'm trying to say to him, what this book is all about. It contains this bulging with information on the reality of the UFO phenomenon in Ireland as going back hundreds of years right up to the present. Many people outside Ireland don't realise that Ireland, in ratio even to America, has as much UFO activity, both on the ground and in the air, as any country in the world.
Yeah, the population of Ireland, the whole country, is what? About
6 million now.
And so, per capita, then you're having lots of sightings.
Lots and lots of
sightings. I mean, when you take the percentages down, that's pretty close. I mean, that's a lot of people seeing things.
Absolutely. And, I mean, we have reports, Jerry, coming in almost on a daily basis from all different parts of the country.
So, what do you draw from this? What's going on in Ireland and the UFO community?
Well,
is there a special relationship there or what?
Jerry, I think there is, and you know, when you say special relationship, I again would harp back to the beautiful area of the Boyne Valley where Newgrange is situated. And again, you know, as I say, it's for our little country and has such a fantastic history in the area of the Boyne Valley, and Newgrange being the oldest building in the world, definitely is attracting something. Now, I don't know in relation to Newgrange and Stonehenge and the pyramids of South America, Peru, etc., etc. They have some kind of an attraction to these aircraft, and I think Ireland is no different. However, with the advent of the triangle UFO, I think there's something special going on. I can't say what it is at the moment.
When do you remember your first triangle report? How long ago has that been?
Well, let me see now. I think it was in 89.
Mm-hmm.
In 89. And, you know, there have been sightings, of course, as you and I both know, Jerry, around America of the triangle craft. And I know Dr. Richard Haynes was very, very interested in any information that he could obtain in relation to the triangular craft, and that's the reason why we contacted Richard in the first place. Now, we're still in contact with him anyhow, and any information that we can harness in any way or degree in relation to these triangle aircraft, he will be the first gentleman to receive it.
Well, Carl Nally, you've done a great job on following up the reports and the sightings. You had any reports of actual contact?
Now, Jerry, on Saturday before we came over to here, we met a young lady in Cork in the south of Ireland. And this is one of our really good cases. This lady is a hypnotherapist, a psychotherapist. She's a lovely person. She's married. She has three children. Myself and my colleague, Dermot Butler, went down to Cork to meet her. We met her in a hotel, the Imperial Hotel in Cork. And she's a very learned young lady. And what she said, the story she had to tell us was very, very interesting. Now, not far from where she lives in Cork, just outside Cork, Celia, I can't exactly say the place for obvious reasons. I won't be saying that exactly where she lives. But not too far of a distance from there is the area of Bantry, which over the years has been an incredible hotspot for UFO activity and observations of beings. And all this information, by the way, is in the book. However, we went down to meet this lady, a lovely lady, as I say. She told us that one evening she went to bed. Her husband was fast asleep in bed when she got into bed. As she lay there in bed, she just couldn't get asleep. And then she looked out the window. This object, like a meter, but going very, very slow past the window, very, very bright. And she said, well, that's very strange. You know, it looks like a meteorite, but and very bright, but going very, very slow. But 20 minutes later, she still couldn't get asleep. Her husband was fast asleep in bed. Her three children were in another two rooms in the house. And she heard this click, 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 clicking sound. And she said, oh my God, I think there's somebody trying to break into the house. So she elbowed the husband, tried to wake the husband up, and she couldn't wake the husband up. The husband just wouldn't wake up, which is fairly typical of scenarios when there's a close encounter going to take place, as you know, Jerry. So what she did was this. She leaned over her husband and looked out into the kitchen. The door between the bedroom and the kitchen and the back hall was open. And as she looked out, she observed this creature, a kind of bluey-grey in colour, and she caught the creature from a side view. As she was watching this creature, she couldn't believe her eyes. She said she was absolutely dumbfounded. Next, the creature turned around at 90 degrees and looked straight at her. And with that, she fell back. All she remembers is no feelings in her legs, and she couldn't see. She fell back onto the bed. And she woke up almost 2 hours later and couldn't remember what happened. Now,
wow.
We said, hey, this is really, really interesting. Previous to this experience, she had taken various photographs, Jerry, in the house, and she discovered on a lot of these photographs were orbs. You're familiar with orbs, Jerry?
Yes.
These orbs, beautiful coloured orbs, and one photograph alone is 19 orbs. She next, at another point in time, took a picture of her husband who was, you know, having a drink and a cigar in his chair. And beside the chair was this kind of plasma, which nobody could see, but was taken up on camera, and this kind of a plasma. Also, her young child, who was only 3 years of age, has been talking about unbelievable. You know, I know this sounds unbelievable, but I take this lady at her word because who she is.
So in other words, there's been contact in the whole family.
There's been contact in the whole family, Jerry. And you know where we've heard of the indigo children? This is a situation with a three-year-old child who was explaining to her mother about, number one, her other mother in a previous life, as she's talking about an experience. This is a three-year-old child, male. Experience in Egypt, talking about scrolls and drawing pyramids, etc., and talking to her mother about the power that these creatures travel. The power that they use is love. That's exactly what the child is saying at 3 years old. Now, what he's also talking about and drew this, and I've seen the pictures for myself, Jerry, has actually drawn a situation where beings can come down from, and he's talking about dimensions, and he's talking about 11 dimensions on Earth. They can come down from a dimension, come down and materialize on Earth, do what it is that they have to do, and go back. You know, and really esoteric talk to the mother, who was completely baffled. Now, I'm just wondering, and we talked about her at the time, Jerry, you and I both know about the indigo children, and I'm just wondering, is this child an indigo child?
Well, with that, I think it's fitting to end our broadcast. It's a good question. What do you think? I think you're probably right. I think it probably is.
Jerry, the thing is, when we're finished here in Loughlin, it was a fantastic conference. We're heading down to Costa Rica to take some photographs and see what we can find down there. Then we're heading back over to Ireland. And on the following week, we're going back down to meet this lady. And we're going to do a lot of work, a lot of regression work, where
well,
to see what we can find out.
We'll be following that up with you later to find out more about it.
It's great, Jerry.
It's interesting that we're talking about Ireland, and that's the first reincarnation story I ever heard, Bridie Murphy.
Oh, yes, it is. Have you heard that, Jerry? You've heard that? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much, Carl Nally. Okay, we've enjoyed it. And The Conspiracy of Silence is the name of the book, UFOs in Ireland. This hour, we've been dealing with Ireland. It's a magic island, no doubt about it. Beautiful, but there's also some pretty interesting things happening there. I think we all will agree. On behalf of Roberta Scott, our on-location producer, and our technical producer, Jane Swartley, until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.